21st Century Entrepreneurship with Martin Piskarik.
I'm Glenn Akromoff, and I created a company and a program to help workplaces become happy, healthy, and productive places. And we do that by continuing to develop people, to focus on each human and build each job around the human that's in it. The challenges with workplaces today are that people aren't engaged. 75% of people in the workplace are not engaged or actively not engaged. So that means 25% of the people are doing all of the engagement work, and 75% are very unsatisfied in their workplace. So what we do is we look to increase that number, and we do that by making sure that the purpose of each individual aligns with the purpose of the company. If they don't, we help them find a place that is the truth. I was working with a client, and we had a wonderful woman who was working in the one of the shops, the maintenance shops. She was the administrative person. She did all the paperwork, and she was good at it. But there was only about 6 or 7 people that visited the site every day, and she would spend time talking to them, and some of them would complain, and people would complain that she was talking too much. And what we realized after having conversation with her is that she was a hostess. She loved hostessing. She loved welcoming people. So we took her from that area and we moved her to City Hall at the front desk, where she would see hundreds and hundreds of people every day. She was there a week, and everyone was so excited. There were people who started coming after 1 week to come visit her because she was so welcoming to them. That's a great example of putting someone from where they were struggling and people were concerned that they could even do the job, to putting her in a place where she was so happy and made other people happy by doing it. Again, serving other human beings by using your skills. Another example is that sometimes you do fit in the skill set fits, but you don't fit in the culture as it's designed. And that's not to mean discrimination or anything. Sometimes people fit in different organizations. So I recently worked with a client who was it was a very big team environment. In order for them to be successful, they had to all work mostly together. And there was one team member very good at what he was doing, but he was not, he did not like to work in a team. And he wasn't as successful. He tried his best in that. And so what we ended up doing is he found a workplace where he would go out. He was an electrician, and he found that he could go out. We found him a workplace, and it wasn't the same one that we were in, that he would go out in a single truck and serve people individually. And he is thriving, and he just sent me an email recently and said thank you for that, because he's happy. The team has now gotten someone else on and replaced him in his role, and they're very much a team player, so they can work as a unit. So it's a great example of being able to put people where they belong and where they want to, both skill set and culturally, to be able to be successful. To build a human-centered and a winning a championship team is what we call it in our company. There are 8 keys to that. And the first one we've talked about a little bit already is aligning purpose. So You want to be able to align your purpose as an individual with that of the company or organization you're working with. What we realize is many individuals have not found their purpose. So part of the process is helping them do that. We teach leaders how to help people do that as well. The second one is creating a vision, an inspiring or aspirational vision, because anyone can say we're going to make money, right? That's always a goal, but it's not really a vision. It's not really serving a inspirational type purpose. So creating a vision is very important. And then the key thing for the leader is the leader will create the vision, but they have to give it away. It has to become everybody else's. The third key is defining winning. Now, that's easy to do in sports and is done all the time, right? It's your record. What is your record for the year? And you know whether you're winning or not. But in organizations, particularly in government that I have a lot of clients with, they don't define winning. There's no, what does it mean to win? How do I know if I'm doing well? So you have to define those key things in order to know that you're a winning team. And it's different for each team. It's different for each organization, but having those key things defined so you can know what your record is. The next thing is defining the season. People believe that, you know, it's just one year and you go from, you know, January 1st to December 31st. Well, that's not a season. That is a year. And almost everything, every operation in a organization can have a season. You actually hear your finance people say it's budget season. And so even in finance, even in HR, they all have a season of when certain things happen. The reason that I want to define the season, I believe that's important, is because you have to take some downtime. You have to regenerate. You have to take vacations. You have to train yourself. For me, in my beginning of my career, I was in a physical job. You have to actually heal your physical body to be able to go through that. So you want to define your season. The next key is clarifying roles. Everyone has to have a clear role on the team. I go back to using a sports analogy. You know, everyone has a role and a position on a team, and they're expected to fill that role. And if everyone fulfills the role at the highest level possible, then you can win a championship. And that's not any different to an organization. Everyone has a specific thing. You want to be able to use their gifts and their skills to the fullest when you're doing that. So defining it is not limiting people. It's actually expanding them. And that's part of the process. You need to, the next key, the sixth key, is to debrief constantly. You have to debrief every time. You want it to become part of your culture. So even if you are setting up a new software for your team to use, and it's a really quick one, say it's you can just download an app. You should debrief what is happening in each step of the way. So you download it, then you go ahead and use it. Is it working? You know, and you ask yourself three questions. This is what we teach. You ask yourself, what worked well, what didn't, and what am I gonna do better next time? That's it. And you get in that cycle, and pretty soon it becomes natural, and you're constantly debriefing. The reason you constantly debrief is because if you do, then you end up constantly improving your company and what you're doing. The seventh key is understanding your flow of performance. And this is something that I came up with by watching my son and then watching myself and then watching my team. And the basic premise is that each of us as human beings have a flow of our performance, where we perform really well and where we don't. And I have found it's about a 6-week cycle. So in that 6 weeks, you ramp up and you start to get better and you energize yourself. And then for about 2 weeks, you're on what I call the performance plateau. And you can do a lot of things. You can do things. You're doing your magic. And then after about 2 weeks or so, you start to fall off, and then you fall off into a kind of a low, and then you go back up again. You can see this easily if you think about this in just your daily behaviors. There'll be, as an example, when I'm actually falling off of my performance plateau, I can tell because when I type emails, I get going fast and I end up sending an email without checking the spelling in the main line, the subject line. And so when I send a subject line out that's misspelled, I know I'm dropping off my performance plateau. It's just a sign that I've learned. But you can see that things are really good, and then something you will do one week, you can't do well the next week. That's your performance flow at work. The reason we teach it is because if you try to get everybody on your company to perform at their highest all the time, their actual performance will be lower. You want humans. We are a peak species. We like to peak, and then we've got to drop off and rest, and then we peak. Overall, if you go that way, your team will perform over the year much better if you allow people to do that. And then the eighth key is planning for the future. And you need to think about the future as a leader. You need to think about today, but you should be a quarter or 90 days ahead of your team and start thinking about. So today we're headed into April as a leader and as a team. Actually, if you can get your team doing that, you should start to think about what is happening, what is going to be happening in June and July. That's where you should be when you're doing your future planning. Yes, you do 1 year, you do 5 years as well. Those are a little more vague. The other part of what I planning for the future is celebrating the past. I know that sounds a little weird, but we as humans we tend to be doers and focus on what we just accomplished and then we move on. It's important that you celebrate that you won. Right? You define winning, you have a season. It's important that you celebrate your championship. We all don't get to raise a trophy out on the center of the field, but we do get to celebrate our successes in our business. So that's the eight keys of building a championship team. So one of the things I found in my career as I developed this program is that we as human beings are very much purpose driven, and you find that the current generation is much more so. They demand the organization have a purpose that is inspirational and that they can get behind. And if you don't have, they will leave quickly. And I applaud them for that, because it's important that we not just use the old industrial way of, you know, you're just a machine, a cog in the machine. That's not how we're going to improve the world, certainly. So as leaders, and I started all of this program as a leader and developed it and then used it for 20 years in a government career, and then now we're doing consultant work to do this, help others do this. But as leaders, you tend not to get the training in this. You go from being a doer, so somebody who's really good at doing something, and then they promote you and they say lead the group, and you do that by doing. Well, in a purpose-driven workplace, you as the leader need to focus on the purpose, not the doing. You have great people to do the doing, and that's what you want them doing, being able to make your company go. So you have to do the backup things. You have to remove the obstacles to them delivering the purpose and those sort of things. You have to remind them. Another part of that leadership is actually re-recruiting them to the purpose. The purpose has got to be the center of what you're doing. Again, I talked earlier about not being focused on just the money, because it's not just the money. That is a perk. That is something that comes with it. And if the company is super successful, you make a lot of money, that is awesome. That helps everybody. But it will not be the end all beat all. It will not have someone come in at 4 a.m. or stay until 10 p.m. to finish that project. The money is not why they'll do it. It's the purpose. It's what's making them feel emotionally connected. And as leaders, we have to bring that and manage that and bring that together. And unfortunately, in today's world, we are not teaching our leaders how to do this. We continue to propagate the fact that they are measured on what the entire results are. And part of that, in my mind, is starting to have a key performance indicator that is on happiness, not just production, which is why at the beginning, and you see on our website, we focus on healthy, happy, and productive. All three need to happen for a human being to give their best. One of the things that I hear a lot about when I go into a new client who's, and I get called in when the organization is struggling, is we need better communication. And that is, that becomes a buzzword. And then when you talk to people, they can't always define what that means. But what we do is we create a communication culture. And that is very much a part of the process. And it's not an out-of-the-box thing for us. We go in, we get to know you, we hear how you talk, we use the words that you use, and then we start to create a way where you can joke about first, but you can communicate with each other the tough issues. And we, of course, you do values and exercises like that to get there, but you have to teach people how their culture is going to work. And actually, we help them teach themselves to communicate, and that is so they, not so much that they can say what they need to say. That's the easy part. They've been doing that all along. The key part of that is that they hear each other, and they connect with each other, and then they understand. Stephen Covey, seek first to understand, then to be understood. That is kind of the premise behind it, is being able to have people hear what their coworkers are saying, both what they're saying positively, because interestingly enough, we as human beings ignore the positive we hear and go right to the negative. And so you want to hear the positive that they're saying, but you also want to hear what are the issues and then what can I do about it? And so we teach people in their communication to be able to ask those questions. So they're not just prepping for an answer when they're going to respond to somebody, but they have a heartfelt response that is about connecting. When you do that, then the team can start to gel and they can start to have the difficult conversations when there's conflict. There's always conflict. Every workplace has it. It's not that you have it or not, it's how you handle it. And wonderful communication and listening is a big part of that. Our organization at Akramoff is building. We have currently a couple of consultants. I'm the lead consultant. My son is, Josh, is also one. I do mostly local government. Josh does founder-based businesses that are scaling or that are struggling. We also have brought in, my brother Jim has just joined us, and he is a paramedic who has PTSD from that and is now teaching resiliency through our company, all of which connect to a happy and healthy and productive workplace. So if you want to find out more, and if you're struggling in your workplace, you can get on our website and take a look. There are some tools there for you to use. They're yours to use. Take whatever you can from us. Yes, we have a book called The Human-Centered Team that highlights the keys, gives you some stories. If you can use that without contacting us, awesome. We're all for that. If you need help, get on the website, info@akramoff.com. We are all watching that every day. We will respond within 24 hours and get to you and help you if we can.
21st Century Entrepreneurship with Martin Piskarik.
Imagine a space where triumphs, trials, and tales of entrepreneurship come alive. Welcome to the 21st Century Entrepreneurship Podcast, a gold awarded journey hosted by Martin Piskarik, connecting with listeners in 95 countries and ranking in the top 0.5% of all podcasts. Join our exclusive community, elevate your perspective, and embark on the path to success.